You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and today our conversation is layered with hometown love and history and leadership and really hard times. And it begins back in April of 2020. You've just been sworn in as mayor of your hometown. Just picture this in your mind. With nearly 60% of the vote, the COVID pandemic is just starting to get serious. And over the next 12 months, your first year as mayor, you'll navigate not only this, but 98 days and nights of protests over racial justice, a mass shooting at your local mall, and a presidential election that puts your city in the center of national attention, all in that first 98 days. Oh, and the protesters, don't forget about the protesters. They will surround your home for 40 days and 40 nights, forcing you and your wife to barricade yourselves inside while chants echo outside your window and lasers flash through the glass, which had to have been absolutely terrifying. And then you're forced to tell your adult children that there is a real chance that somebody might try to kill you. This is not a Tom Clancy novel. This is the true story of Dennis McBride, the mayor of Wauwatosa, which is just outside of Milwaukee, for those of you who are not Wisconsinites. And this is all documented in his powerful new book, A City on the Edge: Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. Mayor McBride calls Wauwatosa a microcosm of everything that was going on in America during that watershed year of 2020. And now, 5 years later, he argues that we still haven't escaped the specter of that time, that those forces are still washing over us. So today, we're going to talk about leadership under impossible circumstances, about making decisions when there are really no good options, about the personal cost of public service, and about whether there's a path forward in this environment for a deeply divided America. So with that, Mayor Dennis McBride, welcome to the show. It is such a joy to be here with you and to be able to have this conversation, which is one that is about Wauwatosa, but it's really about so much more. So let's just start with you being sworn in your hometown in April of 2020, and just a month after the pandemic begins, I don't know what you were imagining when you decided to step up to run to be mayor of your hometown, but I have to believe that it wasn't this. What was going through your mind when you realized the magnitude of what you were dealing with?
Well, first of all, you've mentioned something that a lot of people have said to me, gee whiz, I bet when you filed your papers in December of 2019, you didn't think any of this was going to happen. No, how could I have figured that we were about to enter a historic year, one that we will remember forever, of the magnitude of, you know, the important years of the past, 1775, 1918, 1968, 2001. Who could have imagined that, and who could have imagined that Wauwatosa would be a microcosm of all the events in a historic year? But when I took office, actually, I got elected in the beginning of April. I immediately, even before I got sworn in 3 weeks later, I started working with other mayors to coordinate a response to the pandemic in Milwaukee County. And when I was sworn in, I didn't get all the pomp and ceremony that we have at a common council meeting because we weren't meeting in person. I got sworn in at a little conference room, you know. So we, and then my first meeting, there was nobody there. Everybody was on Zoom. So it was anticlimactic that way. So I guess I knew I was in for something. The officer, Joseph Mensa, who shot and killed three men of color in Wauwatosa over the previous 3 years, 5 years, it was 2.5 months before I took office that he killed the last victim. And we had no protests in Wauwatosa after that. It wasn't until George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis that everything blew up locally and nationally. I want to point out that Wauwatosa is not the main subject of the book. Wauwatosa is a microcosm, but the editor made it clear to me that I was to write the history of America and its mayors during that time. So I talk in the book about Seattle and Portland and Minneapolis and Chicago and Louisville and New York and all that. I was one of many mayors that was dealing with Boise, Idaho, gets mentioned. You know, so all across America, we were either dealing with the pandemic or the racial protests or something else. But again, in my first chapter, I point out we were a microcosm because it all happened in Wauwatosa.
It did, but Wauwatosa is not Boise or Louisville. Wauwatosa is a suburb of Milwaukee. It's not a huge metropolis by itself. So that in itself really makes your situation unique.
Well, it's kind of unfortunate in a way that our name is Wauwatosa because it sounds like a cow town with 300 people in it. But it is almost 50,000 people, 14th largest city in the state at nighttime. During the day, we're the fourth largest city in the state of Wisconsin, after Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay.
Really?
We have over 105,000 people here every day. We have the state's largest medical center. We have the state's busiest shopping mall. We have colleges and universities. We have factories. We have people coming and going. We are kind of the hub of the metropolitan area because of where we are and what we do. So it provides challenges, even during good times, it provides challenges about road construction and policing and fire protection and all the rest of it. So we are actually kind of a mini metropolis. We punch above our weight. And our troubled racial history also factors into this. We are about 81% white. I was just having a discussion today about our logo, which was developed in 1954. And I said to our deputy city administrator, there were no black people in Wauwatosa in 1954, period, zero. Our first black family arrived in 1955. So we were founded by abolitionists from New England, and our churches were stops on the Underground Railroad, and we lost that, and we became as segregated as the rest of America. And we are paying one of the theses of my book is that we are paying the price. America and Wauwatosa are paying the price of that racial segregation.
Yeah, Wauwatosa went from being, as you said, a stop on the Underground Railroad to being a sundown town.
Yes. It was sundown. For those who don't know, that means that if you were black, you had to leave town before sundown. And that wasn't just Wauwatosa. That was thousands of communities across America. But again, we started as a stop on the Underground Railroad, and we descended into that.
So let's back up a little bit, because you wrote this book and your parents were both journalists at the Milwaukee Sentinel and the Milwaukee Journal. So this kind of runs in your DNA. So as you recognized what you were dealing with, that Wauwatosa was a microcosm, what was going through your mind when you understood the magnitude that this wasn't just about the town you grew up in, but this was so much bigger than that?
Well, first of all, I'm also a journalism graduate at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. So as soon as this all started happening, I said, there's a book in this. Mm-hmm. I have a brother who's published 25 books. I have a sister who's published several books. My brother, twin brother, and I, as you know, published a book together. We're a book writing family. This is literally in our DNA. So I said, there's a book here. And people said, well, what is the book for? Is this a memoir? And I said, it's part memoir, but it's not a memoir. The publisher didn't want my personal memoir. It is a history of the moment, 2020 and beyond. It is part memoir. It's also part explanation, because many people to this day do not understand why mayors did what we did or why we didn't do what we didn't do. There are chapters in here explaining the law behind it, the practical realities of the moment. So I thought people needed to know that. I wanted to preserve the history, but I also wanted people to understand the pressures on city governments and governments in general.
You didn't have to write this book.
Right.
And I should mention, because your twin brother, Dr. Pat McBride, who was the dean of students at the University of Wisconsin Medical School, where I went to school, and one of my just favorite people in the world, would be upset with me if I didn't at least mention his book, The Luckiest Boy in the World, which you also co-authored.
Right.
So you did not have to write this book, but there was something in you that recognized that this was a story that had to be told. Right. Still, it wasn't easy, was it?
None of it was easy in a way, but I don't live in fear. I didn't live in fear then, and I will not live in fear. It's just not in my nature. At the same time, I have been guarded. I may make that point that I did wonder constantly in 2020 and 2021 whether people were friend or foe. I had to look at their eyes and try to figure that out. People yelled at me on the street sometimes, but I also got some quiet support from a lot of people. So America was insane in 2020. That's mm-hmm. part of the story of the book. That, I mean, literally the American Psychological Association said in 2023, we have been living in collective trauma, which is another way of saying we are all a bit crazy during mm-hmm. that time. And we remain a little bit crazy, and the pandemic continues to affect us, particularly young people, I think. But and that's been well documented, but people were carrying guns everywhere in the protests, and whether it was a pandemic-related protest or a racial protest, they were carrying guns. And we all know what happened in Minnesota with Melissa Hartman and others, and judges have been shot and killed. I could go on and on. My book points out the surveys of elected officials that were under death threats and things.
Well, yeah, you had to maintain your composure. I mean, you right. were the mayor, but also you were barricaded in your house for right. 40 nights. Right. How did you do that?
Well, the easiest way of describing it is to say, I suppose it's just my nature, but the other part is people said, how did you survive it? And I said, swimming and running. You have to have an outlet for yourself, and the physical release is something I've always said. I've been an athlete my whole life, and I need that, and I needed it then. So the daily swim or the run was the thing that kind of kept me my equilibrium during that time.
Yeah, you got to keep yourself healthy, and yes. you have to keep your people close.
That's the Greek ideal of the sound mind and the sound body.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, I'm talking with Dennis McBride. Friends, he is the mayor of Wauwatosa, and he is the author of a new book, A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. We've been talking about a lot of stuff. We have to take a little break now, but when we come back, we're going to go a little deeper into the personal toll that this has taken on you and your family, as well as some of the difficult and even impossible decisions that you've had to make in response to this challenging time. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm talking with Dennis McBride. He is the mayor of Wauwatosa, and he has recently written a book called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. You can get his book, by the way, on Amazon, IU Press, pretty much wherever, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. We are looking back to the year 2020, when he was first inaugurated into the mayoral position in his hometown, which obviously became very interesting very quickly. And in the last segment, we talked a little bit about what it was like to be barricaded in your own home because of what was going on in your town, Dennis. And in your book, you mention getting emotional when discussing that you told, you had to tell your three adult children that there was a, and these are your words, a non-trivial chance that someone's going to take a shot at me. Well, what inspired you to have this conversation with your kids? How did you know you had to do it?
I didn't call them up and say, okay, we've got to have a family meeting. I just casually said this to each one of them. Fortunately, two live in Chicago and one lives in New York, so we didn't have to worry about them physically. I gave a presentation at my church recently, and a woman said, well, and I showed pictures of people carrying guns in Wauwatosa during 2020. I mean, we're talking assault rifles, not just handguns. And this was going on day after day after day. And it was protesters and counter-protesters, right-wing and left-wing. She said, well, people can't carry guns, can they? I said, yes, they can. All across America, they can do that. So I had to be realistic again. I was well aware it wasn't just 2020 when people started getting shot. People were getting assaulted before that. So I had to be realistic. I wasn't going to live my life in fear, but I had to be realistic about it.
Realistic and bring the temperature down as the leader in your hometown, recognizing that I think a lot of people think, you know, you see a gun and things just tend to escalate, but you had to go in the opposite direction.
Well, I was talking to someone who is who's dealt a lot with police over the years, and she met with me and she said, you're a real calm guy. And I said, well, it's just, I think that's the way I am. And she said, that's how you came across on TV and your interviews. And I was on TV way too much in 2020. I said, well, it doesn't do any good to get worked up. That doesn't help people. In fact, I was actually interviewed by the British Broadcasting Company in 2020. I got an email in early September from a producer at BBC Channel 5, and it said, we'd like to interview you for our overnight program. And I thought, this is a joke. The BBC doesn't want to interview the mayor of Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, if they even know where that is.
Wow.
And I responded, and sure enough, they did. And so during the interview, I was asked, among other things, what my playbook was, how I was going to deal with it. And I said, I hadn't thought about it that way, but let me give you two quotes. The first was from Robert Louis Stevenson, keep your fears to yourself and share your courage with others. That was very important. And the other was from my friend Abraham Lincoln. In his second inaugural address, he said, we move forward with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. So, Christians often ask, what would Jesus do? I was actually, because I'm a lifelong fan and reader about Abraham Lincoln, I actually asked, what would Lincoln do?
That's genius. Every time I go to Washington, D.C., which is often, I go visit Abe, and I always read the second inaugural because it is so prescient. During the Civil War, the country's in tatters, and he is delivering this immaculate speech that is so inspiring.
It would have been his greatest speech, except for he went to Gettysburg and gave another little talk at one point, so that was pretty good, too.
You couldn't write it down on the back of an envelope like Abe?
272 words of genius, yes, it's fantastic.
So, has your wife read the book yet, Dennis?
No, she will not read it. She said, I loved it. I don't want to relive it. And on the back of the book, I have a blurb from former Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who's also the former ambassador to Luxembourg, and the former governor of Nevada, who, truth be told, was on the Longfellow Junior High School basketball team with me in Wauwatosa. But I reached out to a mayor in the western United States who was very courageous during 2020, and it's mentioned in the book. And she said she would read the book and would be happy to do a blurb, but she started reading it and said, I can't do it. It's too triggering. So, you know, we all have a form of PTSD from dealing with 2020. I still have it. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously so painful for your family. How do you navigate being so public and writing so openly about this?
I'm not afraid to speak my mind if my mind needs to be spoken. Is really what it comes down to. I've always been I've been able to speak in public. I don't shy away from that. We can talk more about that, I guess, after the break. I see our friend, the producer, telling us we got to wrap it.
Our own Abe, that's right.
That's right.
I am talking with Dennis McBride. He is the mayor of Wauwatosa and the author of a new book, A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. We will take a little bit of a break here, but when we come back, it's been over 5 years since all of this went down. Let's take a look back at it from that lens of history and see what kind of clarity that time and distance has given you, Dennis, as you reflect on the early days of your journey as the mayor of your hometown. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am here with Dennis McBride. He is the mayor of Wauwatosa, his hometown, and the author of a new book, A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization, available pretty much wherever you get your books. I saw it this morning on Amazon. It's also on IU Press, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and lots of other spots. If you missed any part of our conversation thus far, and it's so important and relevant, please take a look at civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're a video kind of person, you can check us out at Civic Media US on YouTube or my channel, Dr. Kristen Lierley. Dennis, before we look back from giving it a little bit of a lens of time, I think we need to talk a little bit more. You mentioned early on about the officer Joseph Mensa situation. This is a police officer who was involved in three fatal police shootings in a five-year span. And you held firm to the belief that only the Fire and Police Commission could make the decision to let him go. I think it's very, very important to acknowledge that this was in the wake of George Floyd. As you mentioned, it was during that time, there was so much emotion. There were obviously widespread protests. The reaction was something that none of us could have imagined. Can you talk a little bit about the pressure that you faced to exceed what you believed was your legal authority? And you are a student of the law, so you understand your legal authority.
I was a lawyer for 35 years, and I started my career as an assistant to a federal judge, so I've been around. Mm-hmm. I practiced law in Boston. I've interned in Washington, and I've practiced in several states. So I didn't have any problem with it. Sure, the pressure was on. People were at my house every night, practically. But I've taken seven oaths of office, starting with my oath as a lawyer, and then as a federal employee couple of times, and several times as an elected official, and they all said the same thing. I swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin and the United States of America, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same oath, my federal oath is the same oath the president takes. I'm a lawyer. I took an oath. I will live by the law. And so I did that, and people said, well, you know, and they would write obscenities on my sidewalk, and they would also write, Fire Mensa, Fire Weber. Weber was the police chief. And I said, I don't have that authority under state law. If you're following along at home, it's section 62.13 of the Wisconsin statutes, and it describes powers and all that. Only police and fire commissions have the power to hire, fire, and discipline police officers, period. The mayor has no role in that. I could file a complaint, but so can citizens. Citizens did file complaints. So nothing I could have done would have added to that. What people didn't know, and I couldn't explain to them, was that behind the scenes, we were working to negotiate a separation of Officer Mansa from Wauwatosa employment. And we accomplished that in November that year. But I couldn't talk about that in public because you don't negotiate in public in front of protesters. You negotiate in private.
It's really easy to take an oath when there's no pressure on. But when you are literally in your house and there are protesters outside and you are feeling threatened, it has to be uncomfortable. I mean, that can't even begin to capture what you must have felt. How do you balance that between doing the popular thing isn't even the right word, like the thing you feel pressured into doing versus the thing you know is the right thing?
Well, let me read a paragraph from my book. Because I have always grown up admiring not only Abe Lincoln, but people who live by their principles. So here's the paragraph. In Mensa's case, the question was not one of morality, but of law. In 1966, A Man for All Seasons won the Academy Award for Best Picture for its depiction of the life and death of Thomas More, the patron saint of lawyers, politicians, and public servants, and the Lord Chancellor of England, beheaded by King Henry VIII for opposing the Protestant Reformation. In one scene, More's wife, daughter, and son-in-law demanded that More arrest a man for being bad. Ever the lawyer, Moore answered that he would let the man go if he was the devil himself until he broke the law. In a fit of performative piety, Moore's son-in-law proclaimed that he would cut down every law in England to go after the devil. Oh, replied Moore. And when the last law was down and the devil turned round on you, where would you hide, the laws all being flat? This country's planted thick with laws from coast to coast, man's laws, not God's, and if you cut them down, do you really think you could stand upright in the winds that would blow then? Yes, I'd give the devil benefit of law for my own safety's sake.
How relevant does that feel in this day and age, huh?
I taught at Marquette Law School for a couple of years. I taught legal writing and lawyering to first-year lawyers, and I always ended my last class, I always quoted from A Man for All Seasons.
Richard Burton, right?
No, it was Paul Scofield.
Yes,
very good.
All right,
he's
fine.
One of those great English actors. But it's a wonderful thing.
Let's look back through the lens of history. I know you love to do that.
I sure do.
It's been over 5 years now, and you intentionally waited to tell your story.
I had to wait because that's what the editor told me we were going to do. He said, you know, every lawyer, every author wants to publish tomorrow. And it was frustrating to wait and wait and wait, but he said, we're going to do a five-year look back because we're going to do a five-year look back. And I thought, oh, boy, I don't want to do that. But it made it a better book because and I gave a presentation earlier today, 2020 is still with us. We have not left it behind. We are still, a couple of people have said, I read that pandemic chapter and I thought, we're still going through all that. And I said, yes, we have vaccine denial and we have people who think that the pandemic was a hoax and all that kind of crazy stuff. And we're going to deal with that again if we have another outbreak of something and people are not getting vaccinated for measles and all the rest of it. That's insanity. At the same time, we are dealing with mental health challenges still, again, with young people particularly, but also other people. Problems with isolation, social isolation, whatever. And the 2024 election was, the outcome was very much in part because of what happened in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that in the book too. We had a very important part in the 2020 election in Wauwatosa, and Wisconsin had a very important part, as it always does, in the 24 election as well. So all of those things are still with us.
You mentioned earlier that you've been having conversations with other mayors, essentially your entire tenure as mayor of Wauwatosa. The problems in the different cities were the same, but the leadership often differed. What surprised you the most about how different cities responded to the same national crises that you were dealing with?
When you have a crisis, you have to find a North Star, and the North Star for me was just do it. First of all, there are two things. Again, I quoted Lincoln, firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. That's your conscience. The other part, though, is the law. As I said, it wasn't as hard as you might think because I just relied on the law. I talked to two legislators who said, well, you just need to fire the police officer. And I said, I can't do that. And they said, well, you need to do that. And I said, you guys wrote the laws. I'm following the law that you wrote. If you don't like it, you can change the law. You're legislators. And they said, we can't do that because we're Democrats and the Republicans control everything. And I said, well, that's not my problem. Until the law changes, I'm going to follow the law as it exists. I think other cities got into trouble when they didn't follow the law. Milwaukee was one of them, not Mayor Barrett. It was the Police and Fire Commission in Milwaukee, acting on bad advice from the city attorney, who demoted their police chief at the same time, literally the same time we were dealing with Officer Mensa. They decided to demote the police chief for trumped up reasons. The city ended up paying almost $700,000, and Milwaukee had two police chiefs at the same time because that chief was reinstated by a court. They screwed everything up. Why? Because they didn't follow the law and give him due process. We followed the law and gave Mensa due process, and we came out ahead.
This is like the difference between the law and politics. Politics is like the law as if it were a popularity contest.
Right. Absolutely. You're hitting it right on the head. If you follow, you know, the way the wind's blowing, then you get into trouble. If you look for the North Star, you will always go in the right direction. The law was the North Star.
So was there during that time a leader, another mayor that you felt particularly aligned with, or someone who you turned to just to so you could bounce things off of each other and get through this together?
No, I didn't, actually. I was observing other mayors through the media and otherwise. I did get a call from Kenosha Mayor John Antaramian during our curfew period. I declared a 5-night curfew in October of 2020. And he asked, he was expressing his support, and he asked whether I was seeing outsiders. And I said, yes, all the trouble. We're seeing outsiders. He said all the trouble in Kenosha was caused by outsiders, and it was. And on a monthly basis, I meet with other mayors and village presidents in Milwaukee County in a group we have called the Intergovernmental Cooperation Council. I was on an island by myself because no community in the Milwaukee area was going through what Wauwatosa was going through. Mm-hmm. There was no one to talk to. And I would have had to have called Mayor Fry in Minneapolis or something. He didn't need me to bother him. Mayor Rhodes Conway in Madison was dealing with some of those issues at times. I didn't talk to other people.
When I think about elected officials going through what you went through, and then I think about what citizens think you're going through, people have perspectives and thoughts as they're watching things evolve. And what I'm hearing from a lot of regular citizens these days is that the system is broken. It's not working for us. Democrats, Republicans, whatever, people who are not paying attention are just frustrated. But you have said that government is a messy thing, and it's messy because we all need to get involved. So what would you say to these people who have lost faith in their elected officials?
To a large extent, the people, many of them in Washington and some other places, that are causing the trouble are trying to make people feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. Our system is set up for participation. And if you, there's a quote that I live by that used to be at the top of the Milwaukee Sentinel editorial page every day. It was the Anglo-Irish statesman Edmund Burke, and it was, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. I amend that to people he was writing in the 1770s. But the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is that good people do nothing. That's still true today. Mm-hmm. If people are complaining, and they complain to me every day about this and that and the other thing, we're going through budget season right now. And I said to a couple of people today by email, what is your alternative? Help me out. Get mm-hmm. involved.
Exactly. We've done a lot of looking back so far in this episode. Let's, in the next segment, look to the future. When we come back, what is it going to take for a fractured America to find a new equilibrium? I am talking with Dennis McBride. He's the mayor of Wauwatosa and author of the new book, A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. Come on back. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, streaming on the Civic Media app and all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Dennis McBride, the mayor of Wauwatosa and the author of a new book about his term as the mayor. What happened in April 2020, how he dealt with it, and what his reflections are looking back. The book is called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. You can find it at Amazon and everywhere else where you get your books. We've been talking this hour about the events that unfolded during that first time in office and how that has really shaped his perspective on leadership. Dennis, you were reelected in 2024, again with nearly 60% of the vote. What does that tell you about how your community, your hometown, views those really challenging decisions that you had to make in 2020?
Well, obviously it was a vote of confidence and a kind of a ratification of what I did. I have said in other interviews, I felt like I was on an island during 2020 and beyond because there were no public expressions of support from anyone. People were terrified. Other elected officials did not speak up on my behalf. I got a lot of private statements of concern and support, but nobody was able or willing to come out in public. That was a lonely place to be. An island is a lonely place. But I was getting enough people who were quietly saying to me at the local athletic club or at the grocery store or on the street, I support Black Lives Matter, but I don't like the violence, or I like what you're doing or whatever. You, as a public official, you always hear from the loud naysayers. I was hearing from the 10 to 15% on the extreme left and the 10 to 15% on the extreme right. And if one thing comes out of this book is I really do not like extremists, and I don't care what side they come from. I don't like extremists. I was not raised that way. My mother was a political reporter and also at one point the vice chair of the state Democratic Party during the Kennedy years. And my father used to joke, you were raised at your mother's knee and other joints. And my father was a hard-bitten, pragmatic newspaper reporter too. I was raised to be pragmatic. People want to perform in politics all the time. Sometimes it works, but only for a little while. You want to be a workhorse, not a show horse. And that's what I am, and that's what I'll be. You don't get anywhere by performing. You do the work, and you show quiet leadership, and people respond to that. And you also, again, firmness in the right is God gives you to see the right. I knew that if we just kept our heads down and kept marching forward, we'd be okay. And if we followed the law, we'd be okay. I had total confidence in that. Never doubted it for a minute. And time has proven us accurate. So that's to me, that was leadership, was just doing the right thing at the right time.
At the right time. And we're 5 years out now. You can't put that cat back in the box. So we have to have a new version, a new equilibrium to live by. What is it going to take for America to find that new equilibrium, that stable, functional future that you write about in your book?
I think as we look back, I am an amateur historian. I always look for the historical aspect to it, and I've read an awful lot about political leadership and all that. But as I look back in 1918 and the Spanish flu pandemic, and I look back at civil wars, and I look back at, I lived through one of those decades, the 1960s. It was a horrible time in the early 70s. A lot of political division. We found a way through that. We didn't have the extremes we do now. We have a leader in Washington, I think, who likes to stir things up too much. We'll get past that. And but it again, I mentioned this earlier, it takes, it's a team sport. It takes a team effort. Everybody's got to be on the team. You can't say, well, my vote doesn't matter, because it does matter, and I can give you examples of when it matters. We'd be speaking German right now, but for one vote in the Continental Congress. People don't know that. Texas was admitted to the Union with one vote. And there are local examples of one vote does matter. Wisconsin's been decided five times in the last seven elections by less than one percentage point. And we're one of the fulcrums of American democracy in the Electoral College. So your vote matters. Get involved. What I really don't like is people who criticize constantly and they never show up at City Hall and they never go to the ballot box and all they do is complain, and I go, what are you going to do about it? I end my book by saying, this is my last paragraph, as ever, our society is a work in progress. For all citizens, it requires not just a pledge of allegiance, but fidelity to our indivisible republic, a belief in representative government and the rule of law, and dedication to liberty and justice for all. It also requires a willingness to perform our civic duties. Elected officials cannot do that work alone.
Democracy is not a spectator sport.
It's not a spectator sport. The only way we're going to get out of this is for everyone to get involved. I believe in the center of the country, and I don't just mean Wisconsin and the Midwest. I mean the political center. The political center, if it doesn't hold, then we are in trouble. But I do believe that most people are in the political center, a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left, and that's what's going to solve this problem for us.
In the few seconds that we have left, you talked earlier about hope. What is it that gives you hope?
The past tells me what the future is going to look like if we work for it.
If we work for it. Dennis, Mayor McBride, thank you so much for sharing your story and your wisdom and your essential perspective, not just about Wauwatosa, but what the Wauwatosa experience means for all of us.
Thank you. I really had a good time.
I'm so glad. That is the voice of Dennis McBride, mayor of Wauwatosa and author of the new book, A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it on civicmedia.us and wherever you get your podcasts. And check out the video version on YouTube at Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Many thanks to Abraham Lyerly, our producer, and so much more, and Nick Tierman, who composed our theme song. Until next week. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.